Halo, halo, Sacred Icon listeners. We used to do ads for other people, but I decided, why don't we do one for ourselves? Whether you're here listening to us for the first time or you've heard every episode, I'd like to briefly tell you what we're about and how you can support us. We have been doing this podcast since 2019, and with that has come lots of changes. We started as a primarily Halo-only show, but have evolved, combat evolved, over the years to talk about a wide variety of things in the realm of nerd culture. As you can imagine, we've made numerous changes to our platforms, usernames, and emails over the years, so now is the time for me to set things right and give the Covenant back their bomb. You can join our Discord by clicking the link included on our podcast feed. You can also send us an email or a voice message at sacrediconpodcast@gmail.com. We have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/sacredicon, and we no longer use Twitter or X or whatever else the kids are calling it these days. So if you see someone who looks like us there, just know it's not us. Lastly, you can support us on patreon.com/sacredicon and receive a bevy of bonus content. We're so glad you chose us to be the voice in your ear on this particular day and hope you enjoy the episode ahead.
Hello, everybody. Welcome on back to another episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast with your sacred boys here to talk round two of this little retrospective we're doing on first-person shooters. It's me, Joshy, joined as always with my buddy, my pal, my friend, Brian Arvett, the triple threat, and also joining us back from the first episode of this is our buddy Corey and the Entei. Welcome back, boys.
Heyo.
Howdy, howdy.
So, are we getting into better FPS games than the last episode, or worse overall? What's the thoughts here for this episode? By the time this episode's over, will we have more good FPSs or less good FPSs than the last episode?
More
probably less
good stuff to talk about.
Some good stuff coming up. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Let me bring up my notes here. All right.
We'll kick it over to Deontay to put us back on track. Last episode, we finished out 1998, so he's going to take us into 1999. What do we got first?
All right, we're going to go start in 1999 and 2000. We're going to go through a little rough patch here before we get into the good stuff. But 1999,
a little warm up.
2000 brought us Team Fortress, a class-based multiplayer, Medal of Honor, Soldier of Fortune, Perfect Dark, Time Splitters, The World Is Not Enough, and Counter-Strike.
Okay, I'm probably going to have to a couple times ask you to go over those more again. But is this now, this Team Fortress, was this like the Half-Life mod that became Team Fortress? Is that what this is?
I think it was a Quake mod for Team Fortress.
Oh, it was a Quake mod. Okay, that makes more sense. But that was kind of, I can't remember, like, didn't Team Fortress have like a mod version and then like an actual release version, or was the first game just one thing?
It was a mod version, and then it was ported over to Source.
Okay.
And then it became attached to Valve, like to all the Valve games and everything.
Obviously,
I definitely remember there being like boxed copies for sale of Team Fortress, which hard to believe that would be for a mod, but Valve was ahead of the times in that regard, even back in the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think everyone knows the influence of Team Fortress 2, but I didn't really know much about Team Fortress at all until the second one came out. But yeah, there was a first one that there was so much that spawned from the Quake engine and then Half-Life and Source engine to just make all these games. I've never played that one, though. Perfect Dark, I know that's probably going to dictate a good chunk of conversation here. I'm interested to see what Corey has to say about this, because I think, as many people who have listened to last episode noted, Brian was pretty wrong about GoldenEye when he tried to throw that slander, and Corey spoke up and defended his boy. And I think the more I think about it, I just think it wasn't as important to me as other people. So I think GoldenEye's campaign probably was a firm 10. But Perfect Dark, it's the game that was like a true sequel to GoldenEye, and many would say it was better than GoldenEye, different IP, obviously. I'm kind of interested where you guys fall on this one. I know I fall into my podcast host sensibilities to kind of like take over once Diente lists off the games, but I think you guys have a lot more experience on this, so I'm going to kick it off to you. Corey, you go ahead first.
Perfect. Yeah, so this year in particular is really interesting when it comes to the development of some of these games, starting with Perfect Dark. So this was essentially the GoldenEye team, but expanded. They were going to do, you know, like just like you said, a true sequel to GoldenEye. They did not have the Bond license, because after the success of GoldenEye, that video game license became expensive, too expensive for Rare to pay for up front. And so that went to EA, who hired Eurocom to develop the quote-unquote forgotten sequel to GoldenEye, which was The World Is Not Enough. So Perfect Dark gets underway. It's, like I said, the same GoldenEye team, including Dr. Doak, the famous guy who was a side character in GoldenEye you needed to use as part of an objective in the second level of the campaign. Very fun story about that. But he and a bunch of the other people left after essentially doing the pre-production and a lot of the engineering work for Perfect Dark. And they go over, they start Free Radical, and they sign a deal with Sony to make Time Splitters as a PS2 launch game. So a lot of hard work went into Perfect Dark that was carried through by new faces. That game launched. It was incredible, in my opinion. A lot of people say that it is better, and I don't think there's a wrong answer in that regard. It's really just kind of whichever your preference is. Me, personally, I prefer GoldenEye because of the more of-the-time, modern-day, not sci-fi kind of setting and level design and objectives that were a little more relatable than the sci-fi nature of a lot of what you do in Perfect Dark. But it also came with some other features like split-screen campaign co-op, which was my favorite feature ever at the time, still is probably, split-screen campaign counter-op, where the second player plays as the nearest enemy and you can rotate between the bodies to play as the opposing
person that your friends are
coming through. Just like GoldenEye, it had the increasing number of objectives you had to complete. A lot of the level you wouldn't even see on the easiest difficulty. You know, a 10-minute level could become a 30-minute level, just even if you weren't counting the amount of time spent shooting bullets at enemies that are stronger than they were before. The music is incredible. Grant Kirkhope, same guy that did the GoldenEye soundtrack, he does it again.
He's
basically
a legend.
Every track is a banger. I would give this game an objective 10, but it does suffer in the back half of the campaign, or maybe like the last third of the campaign. The level design, it does get very sci-fi-y. You're going through like alien tunnels, and it kind of becomes more like Doom in that regard, or Quake, where it's a maze, you're trying to find the key or the switch to open the door and get through, and in that regard it kind of devolves a little bit. But then, so that came out in May 22nd of 2000, and then in October you had The World Is Not Enough on October 17th, and that was, like I said, the EA game that they had essentially bought the license, handed it to a developer who was mostly known for doing GBA games and ports to console, but they did have success, made a game called Hydro Thunder for the Dreamcast a year earlier, and that had some a good following still to this day. But that game didn't really hit. I remember trying it and being like unpleased with the movement. You could tell it was not the same developer, and so I put it down kind of quick. And then just 9 days later, the launch of the PS2 in North America, along with Time Splitters. So all these people who saw their work get released just 5 months earlier, now they've got a console launch title that's out, and that was a game with no campaign. So for me, I was like basically uninterested in it. It tried to recapture the GoldenEye feeling of everybody sitting
the
around.
First Time Splitters had no campaign?
No campaign. It was only
I did not know that. How many Time Splitters games are there, and do the other ones have campaigns?
Well, there's it changes with two, and then Future Perfect, the third one. Like there are really good campaigns in those that I'm a big fan of. But I was late to it because I didn't play the first one, and I saw that two, and just said, "Oh, it's probably another one of those."
Yeah,
reminds me of Titanfall, but we'll get into that
a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah, a little
good
bit.
Point.
In a future episode, a very future
probably.
Episode.
So that makes me kind of curious. So, like the game I have the most experience with here, sadly, is Perfect Dark, and it's not even that much. I've played it many times, but never beat it or got too far. I guess my question to you is, like, how does the story and the characters of Perfect Dark and GoldenEye stack up to each other? Like, does one seem clearly better? Is it about the same? Like,
I mean, in terms of the story that they're telling, one is telling a side, like, kind of a sidekick piece to a movie. So you can watch the movie and get a lot of story from that. And for me, when I was 12 and 13, and that's how I was ingesting that story, it was easy to flesh that out a lot more, I think. Perfect Dark, it's not really special. It's notable because it's got a female protagonist, a British lady, kind of stemming from that MI6 legacy there. But
pretty cool.
I don't think it's particularly good. You meet an alien named Elvis who runs around with an American vest, American flag vest. That. Yeah, and like a lot of the weapons are really, really rad, but I don't think the story or the characters are particularly good. One other thing I would say about Perfect Dark that is unique is that its main menu was an in-universe like office. You were at the Carrington Institute where your character worked, and you could go down to the firing range and try out all the different guns, and they all had secondary fires. And there was one you could throw on the ground in multiplayer, and it would become a proximity mine. So when players went to run and pick it up, it would blow up in their face. They had the laptop gun. You could like throw your gun, and it would stick to the wall and become an automated turret to just track down enemies and shoot them. So you could pick up a bunch of laptop guns and like fill a hallway of death and just try to hide pretty cool. And wait for somebody to come get you.
Do you think Perfect Dark for the N64 deserves its legacy the same way GoldenEye does?
I do.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I mean, it's a game that I've always seen a lot of respect for. A lot of reviews were like 10s. I think GameSpot was like a 9.9, which every time I looked at it, I was just like, well, I wonder where they failed you on the
not GoldenEye. So GoldenEye was the 10, you know.
I've always respected the game. Obviously, there's the HD kind of remaster for the 360/1. I guess now it's on the Series X as well. is there much more to say about the follow up goal or 007 game by Eurocom? Actually, Diente, you probably want to talk about that one. Let's hear about it from someone who liked the game.
All right. Well, I did enjoy the game a lot. So it came out. I'm still one of those people that, like you were talking about last episode, has no idea about the development of everything. So I just saw a new game coming out, 007, wanted to try it out. I didn't even realize till like last episode that it was Eurocom that did it and not Rare. But so World's Not Enough, it brought a whole bunch of new stuff to the Bond franchise. It improved upon a lot of the formula. Some people don't think so, but a lot of formula from GoldenEye. First of all, the graphics were a lot better, significantly better. The weapons were pretty cool too. You could attach and detach a silencer on your PPK, and it was a PPK instead of a PP7, which was from the movies.
That's important. little changes of the, like minor note, but it's important when you're looking for authenticity.
Absolutely.
And it had voice acting in it. And a lot of the missions used stealth and stuff. You had like gadgets as well that you had to use. Like I think there's a tranquilizer dart, and the watch laser was back, and you could use that to stun people. One of the missions, you had to sneak around and try to avoid casualties as much as possible. But I felt like it added a lot to the depth of the games. There were two different versions. One was for N64 and the other one was for PS1. They were completely different.
Different developers?
Yeah, different developers and just completely different movement, different gameplay, different health bar.
Different levels?
Yeah, different levels. It I actually watched a retrospective on both of them, and most people prefer the N64 version. Also, on the multiplayer side, that was the time I got that. I got that as soon as it came out, and that was the time like I was playing more by myself, but and with my brothers and my sister, and it introduced bots to the multiplayer. Mm-hmm. So we would run around and you know, fight bots. If it was just me, after I beat the campaign, I could run around and fight bots, and it was really cool. They had the one of the coolest things was a sticky grenade, or a sticky bomb. I remember throwing that thing, and it would blow up half of the map. So you had to like run away, and it would kill almost everybody else on the map if they weren't like behind cover. But
did it have that expanding like fog of fire the way GoldenEye did?
It was like,
oh, the explosion happened, but this fire keeps growing, and if I step into it,
But I enjoy this one a lot. I mean, lots of people didn't, but I mean, I was a kid, and I was easily impressionable, so.
I kind of like you guys to both of you to go into it, because I mean, unless I'm missing something, I don't think Josh or I are very experienced with this particular title. Where do you guys think it went wrong mostly, as opposed to GoldenEye? Like, obviously, Deante, someone who loved it, Corey, someone who didn't. Like, what were the issues with it compared to GoldenEye?
I think the main issue with it was that it came out late. Perfect Dark was first. It also had the bots. It had a lot of the maps from GoldenEye, plus a ton of new ones. More modes, plus the classic modes, had a lot of the weapons. You know, the grenade launcher essentially functioned the way I remembered it functioning from GoldenEye. So it's like I could kind of pick up and run with it. And then this other game from this other developer, it's not so much that it was worse. It was just different.
Was the Perfect Dark multiplayer as fun as GoldenEye's?
I mean, yeah, I would think it had all the modes and stuff. The only thing that was really pulled it back for me was the art. But once that game came out, that was what everybody around me played when we were hanging out with an N64. We didn't go back to GoldenEye because all of those options and stuff were already there. You can mix and match your bodies with your head types and stuff.
Which makes me wonder, how much time did Perfect Dark actually have in the spotlight? Because you're saying that's 2000, like, I mean,
May of 2000, yeah.
Like, new consoles are coming out, obviously, eventually, a year and a half plus from this time, Halo, but, like, I'm sure there's other things, too. Like, did Time Splitters pull away a lot of, like, from Perfect Dark, or?
Well, I knew one kid who got a PlayStation 2 at launch, and he got Time Splitters, and I remember we played it, and then after, like, a very short amount of time, we might have played, like, two matches. It was like, all right, let's play Madden.
Didn't have the same appeal.
Yeah, and I think time had kind of moved on, and you know, I was going to say, with the follow-up to GoldenEye being really good, but also being at the end of the N64's life cycle, then you've got the official sequel, the Bond license sequel to GoldenEye comes out. It's also on the 64. It doesn't make a huge splash in terms of sales or anything like that. Then you've got the launch of a new console, PS2, trying to establish itself with that familiar experience and having, you know, decent success, but it didn't really pull people away from anything else. I think that console shooters at that point, the future looked pretty bleak, because the N64, by this point, you've got Counter-Strike coming out. Like, you can't compete with those controls and stuff at this point. People who were familiar with playing mouse and keyboard games, when they went and picked up an N64 controller, it was blah. And then when you picked up a PS2, your only real option was Time Splitters 1. And there's no, like, I can't play this online. What's going on here? The future was not bright at this point. You know, the Dreamcast, I don't know that they had any real first-person shooters of note. None come to mind.
They had Unreal Tournament that you could play online on the Dreamcast, but I don't know what year that was, to be fair.
That may not have been out by, like, 2000. But yeah, around 2000, it was kind of like shooters or it's legacy at this point, and everything else is PC going forward.
Okay, well, before you guys talk about a couple more of those games that Deante listed off, Josh, do you have any thoughts on Perfect Dark, Time Splitters, or the GoldenEye kind of sequel?
No, I didn't think so. I never played really any of these. Around this time, I was playing almost exclusively Toy Story 2: Buzz Lightyear to the Rescue. So, and it's, I say that too because this was still kind of around that time where I was playing, like, a lot of movie license games and sports games. So Dreamcast came out, I wanted to get the Dreamcast because of NBA and NFL 2K and all that stuff. I remember they had that House of the Dead. Do you guys remember the House of the Dead games?
Yeah. Light gun game.
Mm-hmm. I remember playing those and liking those.
They had Typing of the Dead.
Yes. Yeah. That's me with that shit. But I never really played any of these because I was still kind of at that point where I was just about to really get into like the bigger world of gaming. I wasn't just like at the time, I guess I was kind of that like Madden Call of Duty guy. Like I was that casual, yeah. Like, oh Madden, yeah, I play games, but then it's like, here's a couple sports titles and one odd end game. But that changed when we get to 2001. But yeah, I know Perfect Dark's really good. I would like to someday go back and play that one. But yeah, these other ones I've just never really played or even looked at. So,
okay, Deontay, yeah. what are some of the other ones from that you've already mentioned that we haven't touched on?
So we had Soldier of Fortune. That one kind of went more in depth into body dismemberment, which I mean a lot of people don't like, but it's one of those stepping stones to where we got where we're at today, where you shoot somebody in the limb and the limb goes away, you know, or it falls off at that. It was nice. An exploration of that. I mean, his main focus was that. Other than that, it wasn't like a phenomenal game or anything, but it was a small step forward in that regard. And then you had Counter-Strike, which was originally a Half-Life mod. That one was acquired by Valve, and that's objective-based multiplayer. And that took off. Counter-Strike was a huge PC game. And it eventually was ported. It's got ported over
23 years
Xbox.
Later.
It got ported over everywhere, and it's still got a huge following.
An institution at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like any part of it has lost relevance. Like, I mean, obviously, it's not like the new hotness in the industry, but like if you go to that Counter-Strike corner, you'll see that nothing's changed. You know,
how cool is that though? I mean, I feel like. If for anyone that's played multiplayer enough just across the board in games, I feel like there's at least one multiplayer experience you probably had that you wish you could get back that was still relevant in some way. And at least for Counter-Strike, for those people, you know, if they leave it for 10 years, they get in a renaissance mood for it, they can go right back and it's still there. That's pretty cool.
And I don't know if it's something we're going to touch on as we get a couple of years on, but the Counter-Strike console ports or versions, I pretty sure they sucked, right? Weren't they like nothing? Weren't they like I think the one for Xbox might have been like even campaign oriented, which is not what people play Counter-Strike for.
I did not play any of the console based ones, they would be a subpar experience.
Yeah, but that's neither here nor there. So Counter-Strike obviously huge. What's the other one you said? What was the one you said before that, Deontay? I don't know anything about
Soldier of Fortune.
Yeah, I have no.
I remember seeing that advertised.
That's actually spawned a whole bunch of. Follow-ups to, I think the latest one was for 360, and that was Soldier of Fortune Payback. But there are like three or four in the series of Soldier of Fortune. I just remember,
are they any good?
They're okay. Yeah. they're
kind of middling. They kind of remind me of like a Midway game.
Yeah.
Mm.
I get that. I know exactly what you mean. As a
Cruising
fan,
USA title,
Midway.
Yeah. You kind of know exactly what you get with
me. Except Midway did do my beloved Doom 64, so.
That's fair.
Brian's like, just saying.
They have some stinkers. They have some high points.
Yeah. I always love Midway for that reason. Sometimes they were just the most shittiest games, and then other times they were like really surprisingly good, but they always had this. They were almost like a niche developer to me in a way. I don't know.
Or publisher, yeah.
Yeah, publishers, yeah.
Okay, what else we got?
And then the last one for that year I didn't play was the original Medal of Honor. I think Corey might have dabbled in that one.
That was just titled Medal of Honor, no subtitle?
Correct.
I think the first one
was
right.
Frontline?
I thought it was Frontline.
The original was just Medal of Honor for PC.
Okay. I don't believe I played that.
Well,
for PC.
Yeah, we'll get that.
Was it Frontline you played on PS1, Corey, probably?
I played the one on PS2.
PS2.
Opens with the invasion on the beach, and it's been copied and redone so many times.
I feel like everyone's, played that.
I always saw that as Saving Private Ryan, the game.
Basically, yeah, and that's what it felt like. After that, it got less, dramatic, you know, a lot of the levels were not as, didn't make you feel so much like you're part of an army. It's a lot more sneaking around, going through bushes,
and
taking dudes out one-on-one. But a lot of those people went on to make Infinity Ward, who would make the first Call of Duty game, and you know we'll get to all that stuff.
Okay. Okay. So what year are we in now, Deontay? Was that just 99 or was that 2000?
99 and 2000.
Okay.
Bam! New millennium. We've arrived.
Bam.
Backstreet's
I'm ready
back.
To move on to 2001. I don't know you guys, but...
Too bad no good it. Shooters came out in 2001. Right. I mean, that's a real shame.
Right. Yeah, at this point, I was heavy on the... I guess I got a GameCube around this time because okay. Wind Waker was going to be happening and Zelda being the thing that made me buy the system, that's where I was at.
Yeah.
Not good a lot time. Of notable shooters on the GameCube. Don't know if y'all noticed.
See, and that's where, like, we kind of already touched on it, but, like, anytime there's a discussion about, when did consoles become relevant on shooters, it usually comes down to GoldenEye and Halo, and, like, me and Corey kind of went back and forth on this already, but, like, you can see how at this point, beginning of 2001, the aura in the air is kind of... Shooters don't really work on console. Like, yeah, we had a lot of fun with GoldenEye, a lot of fun with Perfect Dark. We got some time splitters over here, but like, yeah. They don't really work the same way that they do on PC. So it is Halo that kind of changes this for sure. But it's also like we do have to pay, homage to like what GoldenEye and Perfect Dark and those games did. I mean, they still most certainly influenced. Like we talked about how GoldenEye influenced Half-Life 1. And all those things certainly influenced Halo. But take us to 2001.
All right, I will. I just want to say one thing about GoldenEye and all those shooters that came on 64 is that those were fun despite the controller. The N64 controller was not designed for the first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. And it still had a huge following. But I think by the time we hit 2000, people are starting to realize, hey, this control scheme sucks. We need something different.
Mm-hmm. That's a testament to the developers for making it work as well as they did at the time. That's what they had to
use. I mean, you look at the N64 controller. The N64 controller, you would have thought it would have been impossible to have fun with that thing.
At the time, I remember being like, okay.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck is this?
When they showed me how to hold it, that you were essentially supposed to just ignore that left prong or whatever, it made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But at first you look at it and you're like, what the hell is this? Why is the trigger so far away from my hand? You know, I'm holding it like this. It doesn't make any sense.
Bro, they designed that for aliens because these are not, my hands do not fit like with that at all. So that is like out of the history of like wacky controllers that I've ever seen, that is definitely up there. Like that is the most successful, like not fully accessible controller to me that I've ever seen, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah. And the Wii is the inverse of that.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah, Deontay, take us forward.
All right, so 2001, another big year on the consoles. We have Serious Sam. Tribes 2 is on the computer. I played that one a little bit. Red Faction, Return to Wolfenstein, and Combat Evolved. We have Halo coming out later that year.
Wow, I wonder which one we really want to talk about.
So tell us about Red Faction.
All right. I'm going to dive into Red Faction because this is one I played before Halo. For PS2. It came out for PS2. You can pick it up on Steam now too. But basically this is a shooter set on Mars. And you're a miner named Parker. And the backstory behind it is
that's one who mines, not a guy.
True. The backstory is basically they have all these workers that are in red spacesuits that are miners, not young, but people who mine, and they decide to revolt against the oppressive company leaders. And so you go there, tensions build in the opening introduction, and then you start out like, hey, we're doing this. And so you're revolting against them. And it introduced like significantly improved environmental destruction. The environment is bland because you're on Mars, but you can tear it apart with explosives, and you can make tunnels, your own tunnels. You can get to places just by blowing up the environment. And it was,
you're like, you want to colonize Mars? Too bad.
It was really immersive to me. First time I saw playing was somebody was playing it on like a church lockout, and I ended up like, hey, I need to get this game. So I got it, and I went all the way through it. It's one of those it inspired sequels, which are completely different. We'll get into that. But it was that initial story of, hey, we're being oppressed, we're going to revolt and fight back against the power. And that was with the destructible environments, making your own path. It was contained in a linear experience, but it had more exploration as through that environmental destruction.
Wide levels.
Because to me, this is a game no one really talks about. Is there much of an influence or a cult following for this game? What is the opinion on this game?
It's a cult following, doesn't it?
I'm pretty sure
it's definitely got a legacy. You know, it had enough sequels to get it into the 360 era, and then we recently had a remaster of that, the Red Faction Guerrilla Remastered Edition.
Yeah.
The worst subtitle
ever.
Right?
I was like, I don't want to play that.
The only one I played is Guerrilla, and I remember being impressed by the destruction. I know it's a different game, but.
And that is the legacy of those games, is the destruction, I think. Even though they switched from first person to third person. It was still good. And it was still fun to blow shit up.
Did this game do well? Did it get good scores? And like, did people like it?
I remember it not really setting the world on fire, but it was generally well received.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't do what PS2 was hoping for and establishing that it's a good platform for shooters. But I loved it. And it was one of the greatest hits. I mean, that's what it says on the box, so it's got to be true, right? And I just
old enough to make that moniker.
Yeah.
I guess we can go to Serious Sam. That one's a good one. I don't know if you guys have played that one.
I played one of the newer ones, and when I say newer ones, it was literally the newest one 10 years ago, so it's not new anymore.
Just within the last year or something, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Might have been
my impression of it was Duke Nukem vibes, which made me honestly not like it. Tell me if
No, you're not wrong. It's like Duke Nukem. The first one is like Duke Nukem, Turok, and Indiana Jones kind of combined. There's even one part in one of the missions where you go in there and a boulder falls and he whistles the Indiana Jones theme. So it's set in ancient Egypt, and these weird ass aliens. I'm not gonna lie, like some of them don't have head. They have like linear heads. So they look weird, yeah. And then you have the other guys that like run at you and scream, and that's one of the most iconic things. Is they really and then they blow up. So you got to shoot them before they get to you.
It's a lot of like hordes, if I'm not mistaken, right? Like lots of enemies was what it had to showcase. So you're just mowing down lots.
Yeah, one I played 10 years ago was on PC, and it was like, holy shit, there's a lot of enemies on
screen. Yeah, it's always looked fun to me, but I've never played any of them. But they've always looked interesting.
Dynasty Warriors of shooters.
That's a really good way to put it, dude. Yeah. As someone who's dabbled in the Dynasty,
so there's probably not much. I'm assuming there's not much to offer in the way of story and characters, right? That's like, not the point. Am I wrong?
I think the later entries they get more into story, but the first one it's a shoot 'em up game.
Blow shit up.
Yep.
Okay.
All the while, we also had I think there was like Turok sequels coming out that also didn't light the world on fire.
Oh, you're talking. That was the next year, but I know what you're talking about. We'll get into that.
Just just a general sense. I'm trying to imply like a general sense of stagnation in the genre on consoles at this point.
Until.
Before we get to that one, isn't there another game in there?
I did have Tribes 2 on the list. We talked about Tribes 1. Wasn't really much different.
Yeah, I don't have any experience.
It was
the
online PC game. It was fun, but I mean, it was hectic. Then you had Return to Wolfenstein. I'd never played that one though, didn't y'all?
I've heard really good things about it. I know it was ported to the Xbox original as well. But yeah, it's a game I'd like to play. Was that by Raven? I think it might have been by Raven.
It might have been.
It wasn't id.
Gray Matter.
Okay.
Gray Matter. Okay.
Who would later do the United Offensive expansion for Call of Duty?
Okay.
Which is one of my favorite Call of Duty pieces of content.
Okay, well, moving into Combat Evolved, I'm going to let you guys take the floor with this one. Obviously, I mean, Sacred Icon podcast, we've talked about this a ton. But for me, I played Halo 2 first, so it changes my perception of the game probably a bit, even though I think it's the same conclusion as you guys. Josh started with, I think all of you started with Halo Combat Evolved except me, right?
Yes.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
So who here played Combat Evolved first?
Probably Corey.
I played it the summer after release.
Okay.
So 6 months later, basically?
Something like that, yeah.
It was probably around the same time for me.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Well, who wants to take it? One of you guys.
Yeah, you guys go ahead.
I'll talk about my experience with it. So I was, like I said, had a GameCube. That's where I was doing most of my gaming. And I was also in a band at the time in high school. So I was not gaming as much as I had been in years past. And one of the guys I met or kind of rekindled a friendship with, we had been Boy Scouts when we were younger. And then he was going to a lot of our shows, started doing like roadie work for us, went over to his house and he was like, "Hey, have you seen Halo?" And I didn't even know what he was talking about. I had missed all the ads or I guess, I don't know. I was oblivious to what he was, didn't know what this game was. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's a shooter like Doom and GoldenEye. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Is it as good as Perfect Dark? Well, I think was like my first or second question. He was like, oh yeah, you got to try it. You got to try it. So I was like, well, just let me see you play a level. And he boots up Pillar of Autumn and just kind of skips through and starts playing the intro. And it's a bunch of corridors. And I'm like, this looks boring. You know, show me something outdoors. And so then he goes to Silent Cartographer. And I see that opening landing on the beach and the music crescendo. And I'm hearing the music, number one.
Great episode to showcase.
Seeing the explosions.
Great level.
With the the dust flying in the air. It's so chaotic looking. And then they drop off the Warthog and he jumps on. And I was like, okay, I forgot why I'm even here. But I was like, give me a controller. Let's play co-op. And then we started the game right there. And that's what we did for the next like 3 days was just play Halo. Halo, Halo, Halo. And then for years after, it was, okay, I'm done with practice or I'm done with school. I'll meet you at your place. We'll play some Halo. And I got an Xbox a couple months later. And when I wasn't playing Halo at his house, I was playing Halo at home. And it's awesome.
that was your, still to this day, your favorite game of all time, correct?
Yes. Yes. And me and him played Halo at least weekly, probably the entire game, if not just get together to like run 2 betrayals on Legendary 3 or 4 times in a row and try to get better at it. We felt like we had to practice to get good for Halo 2.
I love that mentality.
We wanted to play Halo 2 on Legendary when it came out, and my God, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
What, you guys started Halo 2 on Legendary? Like,
yeah, we didn't make it past the first hangar before we started over.
You're like, no.
Yeah, they screwed that one up. Yeah, right. Okay, what about, tell us your experience, DM?
All right, so mine was more in the multiplayer aspect as far as getting introduced to it. Like, went over to a buddy's house, and he's like, hey, let's get on this game and play it. And I was immediately blown away. The campaign was awesome. This is one of those, it is a truly evolution in the genre. As far as like the mechanics are concerned, you had like a melee button that worked, that wasn't like targeted and you could actually hit enemies, and you had grenades that you could throw at any time. Like, you didn't have to switch your weapons. But prior to that, you had to switch to thermal detonators. You had to switch to grenades in order to throw them. And it was like, took up a weapon slot.
You had to switch to a knife.
Yeah.
Melee.
And so this,
you also melee. Carried 19 weapons. Yeah. On the back.
And this, and this one, you had the option just to throw a grenade whenever, hey, I need cover. I'm going to throw a grenade. And we'll keep shooting the whole time.
Master Chief's Michael. That guy can fucking throw, bro.
And the AI was awesome. This reignited that passion, that drive to push shooters to console. And I can't thank them enough for this, man. This a truly awesome game. Back in the day, I didn't like the campaign as much. I thought it was really bland. But looking back, going back and playing through it again, there's beauty in that simplicity, man. And it is one of my favorite campaigns of all time now. So.
Yeah, well, man, said, Josh, man. Over to you. What was your experience with Combat Evolved?
Well, it feels so good to not be a Halo podcast anymore and talk about Halo. That's really cool. Man, it was special. 2001 was a special time because it was really this game that I think transitioned me into getting more curious about gaming as a whole, because like, I just really hadn't played a whole lot of these games that, again, weren't sports games or movie license titles. I occasionally maybe dabbled in something, but really few and far between. And, you know, I told this story numerous times, but was over at my grandpa's, and one of my nephews was playing. They had rented the Xbox console from Blockbuster, and he's playing it, and he wants to show me Halo, so he puts it in, and I had heard vague notions of it, but at the same time, I was kind of like, I don't need that Xbox. I don't need that. There's nothing there to offer for me yet. And he's playing Pillar of Autumn, and it just something, like the wheels start turning, and suddenly I'm like, not only am I like, I have to get this game, I have to get the Xbox, what other games does it have? Holy shit. You know, like it was a Pandora's box moment of just gaming as a whole for me. And Halo was that sort of vessel. It was that door into a bigger world. And playing the campaign, I mean, it's my most replayed campaign. I absolutely love it. I can, every time, this is the sweet thing about nostalgia with stuff like this, is every time I play Combat Evolved in particular, I can still sort of be taken back to that first time playing it and the impressions I had as I was playing through it. Like, I can remember a time when I thought Cortana was actually evil and she was like snapping on me and shit, and that I didn't understand all this Flood stuff, and I didn't know this connected to the Forerunner stuff. And, you know, when I can just sort of disassociate from the overall canon and just play this game like it, like it's 2001 again, it's beautiful. It still plays really well. Flipping the warthogs, all the little sort of tricks you can do are still super fun. I got gameplay on in the background, and I've been looking at this, and like, it was from Brian and I's playcast of it, and Brian was driving the warthog and just barely tapped into me running around on the field, and I died, you know. And it's just the fun you could have, the anarchy and the agency it gave you. I mean, the Grisimir phrase of 30 seconds of fun, of just that combat loop of, you know, shooting a grunt, watching him flip over backwards, then you see Elite coming in the distance, you whip out your plasma pistol, charge that up, shoot him, whip back out, you know, maybe pick up a pistol off the ground, boom, you know, and pop him, or flank the hunter in the back. I mean, all these different tools of the trade. I feel like you're rewarded in that game for thinking outside the box a little bit, and it doesn't feel as punishing and legendary as Halo 2 is, but still challenging enough to be fun. The second level, you know, like, you have this, your hand is sort of held through that first level on Pillar of Autumn, and then you get to the actual Halo level, and it opens up, and it's like, how do you want to play this? And it's like, whoa, what? I'm a little, like, sensory overload. I've never had this before. And, you know, then you have just the rushing, the storming the beach moment on Silent Cartographer, the twist moment in 343 Guilty Spark, Keys turning into the mysterious blob, you know, at the end of the game. I mean, just, there are so many moments where it just, I think this one in particular just notches it up. You know, when I was playing it the first time, I thought this game, like, oh, cool, I'm fighting these aliens, and that's just the whole game. That's what I thought it was, because I had nothing else to base the expectation on. And then the twist happens, and I'm like, oh my God. And then I was creeped out, and by the end of the game, I'm thinking I'm the only human left with Cortana. I can't wait to see what's next. I didn't know there was the Fall of Reach book. I didn't have the internet as much then to make me more aware or talk with other people that had played it. You just had to go start it back over again. You know, like any movie that you just fall in love with and you want to start over again just to stay in that world more. But yeah, this is my favorite Halo still to this day. And yeah, I love it. I love it.
All good stuff, man. You're talking about the kind of, the way it lets you play the way you want to, and mm-hmm. coming off the games that we were just talking about for console, there's no jump button in most of them, you know?
Oh, and, okay. Interesting.
There's certainly no dedicated grenade button and dedicated melee button at the same time to allow you to move and do all these things in this way. They also empower you as a character. You're not really a human. You're a super soldier.
Right.
I remember there being moments, like as we were on our 10th and 20th and 30th playthrough, doing things like, knowing where my partner's going to go just based on his actions, what he's going to do next, because we've developed this chemistry.
Sure.
And then you start doing things like throw a grenade, you know, you shoot one of the big fat carrier forms, you know, he's going to explode, shoot a guy with a shotgun, and you see where he dies and where his shotgun lands. And I could position myself knowing where it's going to go when this fat dude explodes and catch it, hold down the X button and catch it in midair.
Yeah.
When we started doing that stuff, we really just started to feel like ninjas of our own making. And that only attributed our fandom to this game. You know, it wasn't just the lore. It wasn't just how well it was made and how fun it was to play. It was how much fun we were having together interacting with this toy, essentially.
kind of make your own games inside the game in a sense, kind of game.
Yeah.
We definitely experimented with putting on headphones and not talking, only using hand signals if we wanted to communicate.
Ooh,
because we knew one day we would be off or we'd be online and not in the same room. So we had to find like just ways to get more comfortable with the way each other play. And when we pick up now and we play some multiplayer or we play campaign online, it is so seamless. It's like riding a bike, just right back into flanking maneuvers. Don't even have to say anything.
That's good, man.
Yeah, it's like muscle memory.
I think that's also the charm of it too. Is just how like I have so many memories playing that with different friends, like Brian and stuff like that, and just going trekking, tooting up and down those maps. You know, especially the later ones when you're backtracking, and they might feel like on single player, they might feel a little bit more like a chore. When I'm playing in co-op, I'm just having just as much fun as I had in the earlier levels, and goofing around and. Maybe, you know, one of the friends does that thing where they hit you in the back. They go, oh, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to do that. And you're like, you motherfucker. And then you turn around and then you're chasing after them and then you hit them. And it just for like the next 15 minutes, then it's like a just battle royale between you and the co-op partner. But, it's really sweet because, I mean, even the multiplayer itself, the fact that that landed so well. And that's really that was my window into it, sort of, was seeing this like 2-page spread or whatever in a GamePro magazine, and it was like people from the GamePro offices like looking at the camera and like giving a thumbs up with controllers in their hands, and I thought, I can't wrap my brain around the concept of just playing multiplayer without some kind of narrative attached. That doesn't sound exciting to me. Little did I know that would be what really got me into Halo, what really sunk my teeth into my love of it. But yeah, I mean. It's great diversity of levels, fun twists, and it's just beautiful. And you look at the Xbox at that time, and the launch lineup didn't really have anything else to offer. I mean, I enjoy a lot of those games, but really Halo was the one that stuck the landing. But it stuck it so well that I feel like people just hung around just to see, because it was like, now I want to see what Xbox can do, because this is so well. Maybe these other ones aren't so good, but I'm here because I can't get this anywhere else. And obviously, you know, without Halo Combat Evolved, we wouldn't even have Xbox. Xbox would have went like the Dreamcast route probably and not lasted, you know. I mean, it's crazy how different of a scenario. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, I wanted to let you guys talk first because you actually played it when it was, you know, new and in the most recent Halo. I'll skip over most of things that have to do with Halo 2 because we'll get to that later, but I played Halo 2 first. So for me, Halo 1 was... let me ask for the first Halo for my birthday, and I'll go play that after the fact because I already played Halo 2 first. I mean, the whole time that Halo was out, you know, you understand in 2001, I'm the youngest one here. I'm 31. When Halo Combat Evolved came out, I was 9 years old. So my opinion was Xbox is stupid. I love Nintendo. I love PlayStation. Bill Gates and Microsoft and internet and all that sucks. And I don't want anything to do with it. And then everyone will be like, oh, but Halo is really cool. And I'd be like, you're just saying that because it's Microsoft and just, you know, a 9-year-old mentality, fanboy shit. And I used to see people playing Combat Evolved. Like I remember going down into a basement and they had 4 big CRT TVs and they were doing the multiplayer. Or I remember going to a buddy's house and his older brother was playing Halo and he was on the mission Halo, the second mission. And he was going behind this boulder and meleeing a sleeping grunt and just thinking that it was like, it was kind of fascinating, but I didn't have any interest in it. I just thought it was stupid because I'm 9 and I'm dumb. And so it wasn't until I played Halo 2, right when Halo 2 came out, I played that. And when I played Halo 2, like I said, I'm going to skip over most of the details for Halo 2, but when I played Halo 2, it was like, I've never played a game like this. Mm-hmm. Like, I've played Zeldas and Marios and Crash Bandicoots. And I was a first-person shooter kid because I grew up with Doom and Quake. But Halo Combat Evolved wasn't Doom or Quake. It was quite different. And so I played Halo 2, and when I played Halo 2, it was like my first session of playing Halo 2. I played the campaign. It was immediately, this is the best game I've ever played, and nothing comes close. And I have to have an Xbox right now, and Christmas was 3 days ago, so it's going to be a long time before I manage to get one.
That's timing.
You know, bad timing, yeah. So So it was about 8 months after I played Halo 2 that I got an Xbox, and then I got Halo 1 with it, pretty much. And when I finally played Combat Evolved, my opinion was pretty. It was a pretty good opinion for a 9-year-old. I guess I wasn't 9 when I got it. I would have been 12 at that point. For a 12-year-old, I think my opinion was pretty good. I played Halo Combat Evolved, and I'm like, this is just as good as Halo 2, but with shitty graphics. Because as a 9-year-old, it's pretty simple. Halo 2 has better graphics, and that's the end of the discussion, right? Like, we could all sit here and reflect on the merits of the art design, and Halo 2 had pop-in, and Halo 1 was more colorful. But as a 9-year-old, I'm just like, oh, well, the graphics are crap, obviously. But the game's just as
love
good.
Em.
So, yeah. So, no, I mean, I mean, Halo 1 graphics are awesome.
I know what you're saying.
But back in the day, it was just like, that was my only complaint. I was like, it doesn't look near as good. And I was also like, oh, wow, you get to play as Chief the whole time. Like, to me, that was like, yeah. Oh, this is nice. Where for most of you guys, it was like, what the... I don't get to play as Chief the whole game. What the f- this sucks? You know, but for me, it was like, oh, sweet. I get to play as Chief the whole time. And no, I thought Halo 1 was great. I mean, I thought it was more or less just as good as 2. And in a way, I've kind of never changed my thoughts on that because I love, to some extent, all the Halo games. But even today in 2023, I love Halo 1 and 2 like way up at the top.
Sure.
And every Halo game is several notches down. Like even games I love, like Infinite, I love Halo 3, stuff like that. Love those games. There's still just, there's something about those original Xbox Halos to me that just hit completely different. So,
it was also like the advertisement spreads in the magazine, right? You know, yeah, that just looked so era. Cool about this game. You had actual like assets in game used to promote the game, like that PC commercial, I think, promoting the game with Sergeant Johnson.
Oh, like the graphics card with the Marines. Yeah, and, like, the Marines, I got the GeoForce TX or whatever.
It was like
the ads for it in movie theaters.
Yeah.
Dude, it was
Sergeant
like,
Johnson telling you to buy the game after you play the demo.
Yeah, it was
scene.
Like it was like the new drug at your high school, and some kid's like, "Hey, man, you got to try this." And I'm like, "What is it?" And they're like, "Halo Combat Evolved." Oh, I don't want to try that. I don't want to get addicted. It's non-habit forming. And I'm like, I'm like, come on, but I don't want to try it. And they're like, well, it's the new killer app. And I'm like, killer app? Isn't that just a fancy word for a good game? And they're like, Josh, you ignorant slut. You know, this is Halo Combat Evolved, two-player co-op, you know, 16-player multiplayer with four people on a screen at the same time. I mean, just, oh, my God, dude.
Co-op was revolutionary, too, like Corey kind of touched on. Like, the fact that I could play through these games with my brothers and it was uncompromising was a phenomenal. It was amazing. You know, I and what's interesting is, like, I played Halo 2 first, so I have that bias. Is like, you know, people ask me what my favorite Halo game is. I usually pretty much say 2. And that's, there's the bias of like that being my first experience. But you know what the funny thing is Halo Combat Evolved is the most replayable one to me, right? Like, it's the one that any day I can just pick up and play through that campaign. Like, I've probably played Halo 1's campaign more than 2. It's just easier to just, I don't know, it's just such a replayable game. I know, it has issues with like repeating levels and stuff like that, but like,
It
didn't seem to matter at all.
There's still a lot of charm in the mystery of that first game, because the second one is the one that says, we're going to follow up on some of that and answer some stuff while raising
Halo
2's
revealing of
but, the
universe.
Yeah, but the first game is the one where it just, all you have is questions and you get so little in the way of answers. And I think on top of the twist that comes in there midway into the game, it just makes it really fun.
I loved how the game, it made me sad and it made me like question things. It made me like, it was mysterious and it was sad and it was funny. And like, it had all the emotions, right? Because like, there'd be scenes like, you know, there's the one cutscene where Chief just walks to the edge of a giant Forerunner chasm and he kicks that, I don't know if it's a rock or a helmet. I don't know. I think they changed it anniversary to a helmet or something. He kicks it down and he just kind of like, the music just kind of swells in the background and he just kind of watches it go down, and that's the whole cutscene. And it's like, I'm sad. I don't know why I'm sad, you know? And then, you know, Johnson will say something and I'm laughing, or, you know, Cortana will say, you know, I don't think this is how this was supposed to be. And you're like, oh, what's this mystery, you know? And then when you finish the game and it's the whole, like, you know, I think we're, you know, it's finally finished, you know, I think we're just getting started. And it's like, are we? Like, it seems like that's kind of done. And like, where do these aliens come from? What's the flood? What's all these things? And like, just such a sense of mystery. And of course, like, the first time I ever heard 343 Guilty Spark, before 343 Industries came in and filled in all the blanks, you know, when you first meet 343 Guilty Spark, he's like, oh, I thought your armor would have been stronger. Last time you asked me, having time to consider, I would destroy the rings. And you're just like,
yeah,
I was like, maybe with that, I'll figure it out when I'm older.
Like, this dude's insane, or like, but it sounds like he also kind of knows what he's talking about. And like, it was just, it was something else, man.
I think something that made those questions even more poignant was the fact that for almost the entire time I was playing Halo Combat Evolved, Halo 2 had been announced and was coming, you know, it was on the horizon. So those questions were like, these are questions we're going to get answers to at some point in the not too awful distant future.
Yeah. You
know, yes, we're going to be older, But we're going to be really good at the game when it comes out.
Yeah, training up for that legendary Halo 2.
I get that, man, because before I got Xbox Live, I used to play Halo 2's co-op, or I'm sorry, just the single player on Legendary, because I thought, this is going to make me good online. Nope. Mm-hmm.
Now,
but that was my headspace.
A question I have for you guys.
True.
Question I have for you guys that I'll kind of answer myself first to give you an idea what we're looking for. But like, once you played Halo Combat Evolved, did you feel like there was anything about prior shooters that were better? And I'll answer my own question by saying, I think the only thing that I really sometimes prefer or miss or like to go back to about shooters that came before Halo was like the frantic, you know, fast-paced bunny hopping style of like Quake and Doom type stuff. Like I yearn for that, and I'll go play that instead because I want that. But other than having that kind of fast-paced style of the older shooters, I kind of felt like Combat Evolved was just doing everything better than what came before. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it bunny hopped over. Every feature was like better implemented, felt better. Had more thought behind it, was technically more well done,
yeah,
and also seemed more expensive. This was one of the first games where, you know, I played games on the GameCube, but this was a game where the music, the size of and scope of everything going into it, the universe won, but also the size of the levels and the number of instruments that you're hearing at a particular time. All of that shit was so mind-blowing that, like, at this point in my life now, I'm thinking about GoldenEye, and it's like, oh man, that's like an Atari game at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Who wants to go hold that fucking controller now?
Right.
Yeah, and the music can't be undersold, right? Like I think if you had just like the most run of the mill, no name person, obviously he wasn't a big name at the time, Marty O'Donnell and Michael Salvatore, but like if you had the most no name person just throw something together for this musically, I don't know if it, even with the innovations in the controls, I mean, you know, that I guy, just talked about all the emotions that I felt. That was because of the music.
That guy from Attack of the Show, I can't remember his name, Kevin something, right?
But Herrera?
Yeah, I think you're right. But the guy on that Halo 2 remaking a classic or whatever, he said it best. Like, that was the first game that you ever were like, holy shit, I need to have this on a CD that I can
in
play
my
in my car and listen, because it lets me live in that world still. It was iconic. I never considered soundtracks to games at that point until I played Halo. Then I started paying attention to that stuff more. And I think that's just, soundtracks are a huge part of nostalgia. Like you and I, Corey, were talking not too long ago about like some of the, like the jungle music and some of the like sea music. And I think it was like Donkey Kong and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that stuff just, it sticks with you, and that dun, 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 you know, and it's just, oh man.
Also like Star Wars, you know, when you pick up a game as old as Knights of the Old Republic that I played recently, and you hear those John Williams themes, you're instantly drawn in. And if it were anything else, it would not be that
like successful. This is Star Wars.
That's what
if it were original music, it would not be as successful at this.
No, you hear some of that stuff in a setting that doesn't even necessarily look like what you're used to Star Wars looking like, but because the music is there, you're like, okay, I'm here. The magic's here.
And
yeah.
What's so cool about, well, it's cool and also kind of unfortunate, I guess, for everyone else, but like Halo Combat Evolved was so far ahead of the game that, and maybe Diente will bring up stuff here that proves me wrong, but I feel like it was so far ahead of the game. We, as we go through these following years, there's nothing really challenging Combat Evolved or putting it in its place. It's kind of just
all the little things.
It's Halo and everything else.
It's the blood on the ground, the giant goo. It's the grunts screaming at the top of their lungs or running from you or charging toward you. You know, is that moment on 343 Guilty Spark when you're trying to piece together something bad that has really gone wrong at this base, and they start playing this eerie music that sounds like stuff crawling on walls, and you're like, what the fuck was that? You know, and you watch that cutscene of everything that happened, and then the boof, 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 and the door bust open, and all these little floaty heads just come rushing at you, and you're having to mow them down. It's terrifying. Like, the game just goes through like different tones. I mean, I don't know. It's so
later,
fucking good, man.
Later on, you've got the Flood versus Covenant. And
yeah.
You've got the Sentinels coming down, and you just can see these battles happening from afar, and you're really just concerned about getting to the point on the opposite side of this battlefield, but it's like, do I want to sneak around? Do I want to get a vehicle
and try to agency.
Like mow through or drive around this stuff? Or do I want to go in guns blazing and make sure every single enemy is dead before I move forward?
Yeah, it's like the first half of the game, I'm always like wanting to try to keep the Marines alive as much as possible. And And I love hearing their chit chatter and just looking at them and stuff. And then by the end, the last half of the game, I'm the one trying to survive. They're all gone.
You know? So just getting chewed up everywhere you go, and getting run over and screaming.
Yeah. It also can't be understated just how much the fact that you could drive vehicles influenced this to me. And like, it was fun to drive them. It wasn't this, because like, I feel like in shooters and or just games in general, there was usually a vehicle level, vehicle mission. Oh, I start in a tank and it's this level sucks and no one likes it and I can't wait till it's over. Mm-hmm. And then you get to Combat Evolved. It's like, hey, there's a Warthog over there. Use it if you want. It's going to be a blast if you do. But if you don't want to, you don't have to.
By the way,
you can freaking fly through the air in a Banshee. Like, how many games are letting you just fly in the open world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it felt like, I mean, anybody today, if they play a mission like Halo and I said it was open world today, they would laugh at me because it's so quaint. But it's like in 2001 on the mission Halo, flying, if you're in a Banshee or driving around, like it just felt like it felt limitless, right? Even especially with Bungie's backdrops, their skyboxes, which are still so untouched.
Good. Yeah,
you know, they're untouched in that as far as skyboxes go. So
I think that improves on the repeating levels too, because right when they start repeating levels is when they introduce the Banshee for you to use.
Yeah,
the Banshee, so and then they
fault on the control room, and you're flying over, and like there's all this stuff above you that you had no idea was there before. So that really mitigates a lot of those issues, I think.
They're changing, even though it's the same level, they're changing the environment, they're changing the time of day, they're changing the enemies, the enemy
circumstances with which you go through areas. You know, going down a hill in a tank with big loud drums banging is a lot different than going through it on foot at night, coming up out of that while like.
I don't think, and of course I was super young, but I don't actually think I realized any missions were repeated my first playthrough. I think I just thought, like, when I went, like when you go to the mall, I thought, oh, this is, they've completely built a new level with the Pillar of Autumn crash.
You don't think about that stuff when you're younger playing that stuff, no.
Then later you're like, wait a minute, this is the same shit, but you just made it burnt up more. Yeah. You know, like, you know.
You tricked me. But no, how many people, you know, I love things like that too with the Banshee. Like, how many people in 2001... played that in co-op, saw their buddy take off in a Banshee after betraying them, and then thought, I wish I could just hop on there and just rip you out of it, you know? And then what we'd get to like in a couple years from then, that had such a nice evolution, even though Halo 2 is different. We'll get
pretty much like we're clarifying this by talking it through, but like every component of Halo just felt like a new bar. Music, gunplay, controls, driving, everything. Something that Deontay mentioned right off the bat is the AI in this game was insane, and it's still really good today. I remember not too long after, no, I don't think it was MCC. I think it was actually the Halo Combat Evolved anniversary for 360. I was playing through it, and my brother walked in the room. So this would have been over 10 years ago, and I'm like, watch this. This is insane. And I was like, I was in, you know, one of those confusing rooms in Assault in the Control Room where the arrows are on the floor and everything looks the same. I was in one of those rooms, and Elite was just, you know, full force running at me directly, and I'm backing up with my gun, and I chuck a plasma grenade out, and he just freaking ducks and rolls out of the way and then continues to run at me, and I'm like, this was freaking 2001, like, holy shit, like, he feels like a real character, you know, like, that was, most enemies in games back then would just take it, you know, like, oh, there's a grenade, I'm just gonna die now.
But, I like when you die, and then,
this like, oh, looking shit! Looking get out of the way.
You know? And they just keep shooting you repeatedly, going,
after you're dead.
Yeah. And then they'll say something, you don't know, just like, people sound a bunch of people. Like,
oh. We're gonna smell it coming.
Yes! Oh my gosh.
Man, so much fun. Bungie... Legends. Legends, bro.
What do we got next, though?
All right.
What's after this? Are we 2002?
We're all on a high of shooters.
Yeah.
It's the best shooter that's ever come out. Everybody's blown away by it.
All right. So 2002, brought a couple pretty good games. A lot of misses, but we had Medal of Honor Allied Assault, which was a good one. That one was the console version, or the computer version to what would become Medal of Honor Frontline. And they had that opening mission that was like Saving Private Ryan, basically playable Saving Private Ryan. And that blew a lot of people away. Even Corey and I were talking about this, how like so many people still talk about that opening level of Medal of Honor Frontline.
They still copy.
Yeah.
Like in That's World one of my dad's League. Favorite games
again
because of that opening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you had Time Splitters 2, which had the introduction of the campaign. I played it a little bit. The aiming controls are pretty janky, though. They reminded me of
GoldenEye. I love your notes, buddy. I love your notes. Janky-ass controls. That's the note for this game.
I just dabbled in it because the controls at the time frustrated me so much. Then you had America's Army. That one, I went back and looked at. A lot of people gave it great reviews. That kind of set me back a couple years. Maybe I should join the Marines. I just thought it was a terrible game.
Now, this is PC only America's Army.
Yeah.
This thing is so interesting about this game. I had a whole family I was friends with, Kyle's family, actually, Josh. They all played it. The Kyle's dad, his brothers. And you had to spend hours studying for a test to take a test in the game to be able to play the shooting part. Like, you had to sit in a classroom, watch like a teacher in a presentation in virtual, and take a pen and paper written test in the game. And until you could pass it, and it was an actual like real test, until you could pass it, you could not go and,
yes,
and
teach play against the video people. Game.
That sounds like the Army. Yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah. Yep. And it was there's no campaign. There's just multiplayer.
Google all these answers and then get into multiplayer.
Yeah, I think they actually changed the questions every time so people couldn't do that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Because I remember watching my buddy fail at it over and over again. So, yeah.
Wow. And then Battlefield 1942.
People love that game.
1943
right?
is what you can play now, which is the sequel. But they're still great games. It's just like a open sandbox World War II battleground. And it's a lot of fun. Red Faction 2. I think, Corey, you played this one, right?
A little bit, yeah.
So this one is completely different than the first one. The first one, you're a person who mines. The second one, you're a super soldier. And you go in there and it's got destructible environments. They're not as destructible because you're on Earth and you can't just completely wreck everything. But you can make holes in places that aren't usually supposed to have holes. And you can dual wield. And that was one of the big things, was being able to dual wield in that one.
Was that one of the... Well, no, it wouldn't have been the first game. No.
You could dual wield in GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
And then Metroid Prime. I haven't played that one, but I know Corey had a GameCube ready for that one.
Yeah, and I was not a big Metroid fan at the time. I'm still not a huge Metroid fan. My first experience was Metroid 2 on the Game Boy, which as a youngster was basically fucking impossible to get anywhere. So those games were just really hard. But then it was in first person, and I could see the influence of something like Halo on there. I had a GameCube. This is coming out. It's first person. It's Nintendo. Let's see them try to put their spin on Halo and see what it's like. That's kind of how I approached that game. And it's got a lot of Half-Life vibes, I would say. The just kind of lack of interaction for long periods of time. You don't necessarily have chapters, but you're just going into different areas, one continuous chapter, so to speak. That is a legit classic. I'm not the biggest Metroid fan, like I said. I never played Metroid Prime 2 or 3, but I'm excited for 4. And if they released those on the Switch today, I would play them.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say for if anyone's listening who hasn't played Metroid Prime, it's a shooter, but it's not a shooter like you'd picture Halo or Medal of Honor.
Like a Zelda shooter almost.
Yeah.
Lock on, like basically Z targeting button.
Yeah.
For when you shoot, and then you're just essentially doing actions while rotating around whatever enemy you're targeting, including holding down the shoot button.
Yeah, I wouldn't say prior experience with shooters would have any bearing on you liking or not liking Metroid Prime. It's a completely different thing is how I would view it. But the interesting thing is, obviously I think Halo's impact is obviously bigger, but there's plenty of people who would say Metroid Prime's a better shooter than Combat Evolved. I mean, I actually think it might even have a higher Metacritic score than Combat Evolved. Metroid Prime is beloved all-time classic, but I'm with Corey. I've never really been a fan. And when the remaster came out this year, I was like, this is the time. I'm going to put effort into it. I'll use a guide. I'll make sure I get through it. I bought it, really impressed with the remaster. I just wasn't having any fun. I just wasn't. And that's not because the game's bad. It's just not for me.
And one of the crazy things about Metroid Prime is if you think about it, it's one of the few Japanese first-person shooters that you have. Like, most of those first-person shooters come from the U.S., from Europe, but Japan hasn't really dipped their toes that much except for
Well, that was made by a European developer.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Who is it? They did the first three, and then they went and made Donkey Kong Country Returns. Retro.
I was going to say, is it Retro?
Yeah. Yeah, Retro Studios. So they kind of took the Nintendo formula from those, what is now the Metroidvania formula, and put it in first person. And it really is more of a Metroidvania first person adventure than it is a shooter, I think. But just as a video game in its own right, it is great.
All right, I have a couple more that I added after going back and looking. Some honorable mentions: we had Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast. That one's a good one. You can play that on Switch now. You can play it on Xbox. I definitely recommend trying that one out. It's like a continuation of Jedi Knight, which was one of my favorite games. So, Command & Conquer Renegade. This is one of the few Command & Conquer games where you had the first person. It wasn't really anything special, but it was pretty cool that this I forget what the genre is called. Where they delve into the first person aspect. So I thought that was pretty cool.
See, I loved the original Command & Conquer real-time strategy, but yeah, I never put any thought into playing this one.
And then Turok Evolution.
Is this the third one?
This is the one that came out for Xbox. And
go ahead, sorry.
I had completely forgotten about this game, and then I saw gameplay footage, and it took me back. I was like, man, I played the crap out of this game. It wasn't great. It wasn't phenomenal. It wasn't groundbreaking, but I loved it. And I love killing those lizard dudes and dinosaurs. And a lot of people hated it, but I thought it was fun.
So the biggest impact that 2002, holy crap, we're old, 2002 had on shooters was this kind of pivot to the side with Metroid Prime, right? Like, not really a competitor or an iterator of Combat Evolved.
Well, I think that, like, Time Splitters 2 deserves its share of credit because the first game is kind of like a Titanfall 2 situation, right? The first game came out, multiplayer only, had its fans and defenders and detractors. And then the second one had, I think, a genuinely cool campaign. Okay. But the problems with it stem from it being a post-Combat Evolved game. It was still very much an evolution of GoldenEye.
Felt like we're going backwards.
It felt like going backwards a little bit, yeah. They were evolving down their own separate streak, but like your path had essentially been obliterated by Combat Evolved a year later. So,
yeah,
you know, it's cool that you're doing this, and it's kind of more fun to go back to them now and play them knowing that it's a retro experience.
Different.
Because then you can appreciate it for what it is. But at the time, when it's competing for your time with Combat Evolved, it's like, I ain't got time for this.
Well said.
If I can talk about Jedi Outcast, that was a really fun game because, you know, it was first person. So for those that, like me, hadn't played the second one, I was just coming over from Dark Forces. It felt like that just evolved with next-gen graphics at the time. But then about halfway or maybe 30% into the game now, I can't remember, you get a lightsaber like you had in the second game, and you get to go around third person and do that stuff. But it was just really fun. I remember that game at the time being heavily promoted as having Billy Dee Williams voice Lando. And we're so used to that type of stuff now. But back in 2002, that was a big deal. And that was actually a selling point for the game. And he did good. He did good. But it was really cool to see sort of the next step of what Luke and everyone was kind of up to and explore some worlds only previously mentioned about or read about in books, but getting to see him conceptualized. That was a really, really fun game. And that was a big point. Once 2001 came and went when Combat Evolved, I kind of went in the direction of Star Wars because Attack of the Clones was coming out that year. And there was just a bevy of Star Wars games, and Jedi Outcast was definitely at the top around that time. That was a good one. But what do we got next? Let's take us forward.
All right, 2003. This one saw a dip in the number of first-person shooters going to consoles. We had Medal of Honor Rising Sun, which I know Joe was talking about. That's a good game. That one's basically Medal of Honor just set in Japan. Postal 2, I never played that game. I know it had a lot of controversy behind it. And then you had Infinity Ward, which was broke off of EA, the Medal of Honor series, to make Call of Duty. I haven't played that one. I know Corey has. I'll let him get into that.
Yeah.
Now, is this the original Call of Duty? Was it PC? Well, you said was it PC mm-hmm. only for that one?
Yeah. PC only, yeah. Okay. And there were a few spinoffs that went to console, just like you were saying, totally different games by different developers, like
Finest Hour.
Yeah, that game sucked. So disappointing. I came off of Call of Duty PC, and I was like, this is easily the best World War II shooter ever made. Almost every level captured the feeling of that beach scene in the first Medal of Honor we talked about, where you're like, it feels like you're surrounded by so much action. You know, the war is going on despite you. Yes, you have your objectives, but while you're doing this, it feels like you're part of something bigger, you know, versus your corridor shooters of the time, like your typical Medal of Honor games would.
Would you have ever have guessed how much of a behemoth this franchise would have been?
Hell no, dude. Especially when that Xbox port came out and it was so bad, it was like, okay, well, let's wait and see what the original team does next, which would be a 360 launch game. Mm-hmm. But that first one, yeah, it was so good. And they had that team I mentioned earlier, Gray Matter, put out an expansion to it that I thought was even better at the time. It covered the Battle of the Bulge. You know, get to your foxhole. If you get out of your foxhole, you're probably going to get shot. It was so well done and so well scripted. And this was a point where I was noticing developers being conscious of where your crosshairs were to make sure you were looking the right direction before something big and cinematic happened. Mm. And when they pulled that off well, it was like, it's like magic. I think it's still like magic when developers can do that really well.
Now, was it Infinity? Did Infinity Ward put out Call of Duty 2 or Call of Duty 2 Big Red 1?
That was 2. That was them on the 360.
Mm. Who did Big Red 1?
I am not familiar with
the They're separate games, though?
Yeah, they are separate.
Yeah, so Big Red 1 was kind of like their, because you had the new generation that came out, Xbox 360. Big Red 1 was like, okay, we still remember you, Xbox and PS2. Here's a game for you.
yeah, it was Treyarch who would then eventually become the developers of Call of Duty 3.
But Call of Duty 2 was more popular than Call of Duty 2 Big Red 1. Is that right?
I believe so. It was the one on the next gen. It was the one that a lot of the buzz around the time was really focused on.
Okay.
I love the name. Call of Duty, I don't remember that at all.
Arguably, in a sense.
Yeah, it's the first armor or first infantry division. So that's it that followed them.
Well, that's me and my GED showing. I didn't.
They read one on their helmet.
Okay, that makes more sense.
One of the most important first person shooters ever. I mean, it wasn't like the granddaddy like Doom or Wolfenstein. It wasn't Halo that revolutionized consoles, but Call of Duty, I mean, it's still the biggest shooter out there. I mean, today.
Yeah. Call of Duty 2, it took a lot of the Halo control influence and just made it real snappy on a brand new system, new controller, sticks. It felt great at the time. You go back to it now and it's a little, the auto aim is a little too sticky. Mm-hmm. Kind of movement's kind of wonky. But at the time, you know, it popularized the series and led to what we now have, which is this, that was the first of the annual behemoths was Call of Duty 2.
Yes, sir.
Hell yeah.
And then
hell yeah.
A couple honorable mentions. We had Delta Force Black Hawk Down, which was, I mean, I know I talked about the original Delta Force in 98, but this one kind of borrowed from the movie Black Hawk Down, which was a huge deal at the time. A lot of people, this game was pretty good. It came out to consoles. It wasn't anything revolutionary again, but it was a solid game. And then you had 13, which was a shooter set with that cel-shaded animation with that go ahead, Corey. It looks like you're going to say.
As soon as you said 13, I thought of David Duchovny and how bored he sounds in that game. He plays the protagonist, and he sounds like he was asleep while he was reading his lines.
Collecting the paycheck.
Collecting that paycheck.
Yep. Yeah.
And then Jedi Academy, which was less like, it was the continuation of the Jedi series. This one's focused. You started out with a lightsaber, so it was less FPS focused and more lightsaber combat focused, from what I could gather. What do you think, Josh?
This is one of my least favorite Star Wars games. People love it, but I have always had an issue with it because it's so short compared to Jedi Outcast, and the protagonist you play as, which they give you some light customization options, but it's just so unlikable and everything that, like, Kyle Katarn is now your mentor and all this stuff. And I was like, I just want to be Kyle Katarn. Whereas everyone else is like, I get to be me, you know. But it was still fun. I mean, if for people that like if they're playing them chronologically, they're going to naturally like that one. It just, for the final one, we haven't got any of them since. It felt pretty underwhelming in a lot of ways for me personally. But still fun in terms of the gameplay loop with the first person aspects. And obviously the lightsaber combat was so amazing. But yeah, it was still fun. Still fun.
Right on.
Is that it for 2003?
Yeah, that's it for 2003.
It is. Well,
would you, I think this would be a good spot to, do you want to give us the sizzle reel for 2004 and then we'll make some closing comments on
what we talked about? Yeah, we can do that.
Well, because we got a part three, probably a part four, five, who knows how many parts we got.
We almost made it through a whole page again.
Yeah. It's always that last one that gets us.
Yeah.
Well, this 2004 is a big year. You have Brian's favorite game that came out of all time. You got... One of the more forgotten about ones that was huge at the time was Escape from Butcher Bay. We'll go over that a little bit.
Okay. Escape from Butcher Bay, Halo 2, Doom 3.
You got the Halo killer, Killzone.
Killzone, yeah. Yikes.
Can't forget about Half-Life 2.
Half-Life 2.
Doom 3. We're going to get into it.
See, and I remember going to Best Buy. It makes me so sad because it's not like this anymore. I remember going to Best Buy and seeing the aisle with all the big PC boxes and seeing Gordon Freeman's face everywhere and just hearing people talk about, like, what's better, Half-Life or Halo? And I remember thinking, like, well, once I was a Halo fan, I was like, well, Halo, right? Like, what's this? Half-Life, what's this? Like, is this some, like, scientist game? I don't want this, you know? And, of course, I mean, I love Half-Life now, but, like... Yeah. Oh, what a great year. And Doom 3. I can't wait to talk about that as well because of kind of how it changed up that series. And it's kind of a black sheep in that series, but I love it. Lots of good stuff to talk about there.
Hey, shout out to Nestor. I'm sorry we didn't get to 2004, man, but we're going to get some sizzle on Half-Life 2 and the Orange Box at that point. Orange Box came later, but, you know, it's part of Half-Life.
Next episode is going to be an hour and a half long, and it'll just be the year 2004.
Possibly.
It's gonna be tough to sort of like summarize Halo 2.
I feel like Halo 2, Doom 3, and Half-Life 2 all each will get at least 20 minutes, at least. Yeah,
this is where the Halo clones all kind of converged, and then you also had the next evolution happening as Halo 2 was hitting alongside these other bangers.
Okay, yeah, so I don't know, not to put you guys on the spot before we get out of here. So right now at this time, I think... it's clear as day that all of our favorite shooters at this point, his favorite shooter is Combat Evolved, as it was going to 2004. What's your second place? Probably, is it GoldenEye for you, Corey, probably? Or what's the
shooter
second
place? Or game? Of these shooters, you mean?
What's your second favorite first-person shooter
here?
That's come before Halo Combat Evolved?
Yeah, it would probably be GoldenEye. If you ask me on a particular, maybe on like a... every other Wednesday night, I might say Perfect Dark, but usually it's
every other Wednesday. That's when he's in the right mood. He's got, he's got a pedicure, and you know he's relaxing. Yeah. He's got a towel around his waist, and yeah, Perfect Dark
sounds very comfortable.
Yeah. What about you, Diente? Is it same for you?
I would say GoldenEye or Dark Forces or Jedi Knight, Dark Forces 2. I don't have a lot of time in that one. Dark Forces 1 is still a phenomenal game. I mean.
Yeah,
the sounds take me back. That sound effects.
No, it's hard to beat the 8-bit like sort of almost sounds the more like video gamey themes of Star Wars from the 90s.
Even the opening when the Lucasfilm thing pops up and you got the TIE fighter sound coming in, I'm just like, oh yeah, let's get it, baby.
I miss those like 90s Star Wars games hit so hard when you had like TIE Fighter and the Rebel Squadron games and Shadow
of the Empire.
Yep, Shadows of the Empire.
The Hoth level. Oh my god. Oh, I would beat the second level and then start the game over.
That's what I've heard a lot of people have done.
Over and over.
Yeah. It was on a different
level. Is that where you're at too, Josh? Same game?
Mine would be Jedi Outcast. That would be my second. So close. But yeah. Yeah, definitely. A lot of love for that game.
For me, I'm all the way back at Doom 2 still, the original Doom 2. Oh, wait.
I forgot
Diente?
Half-Life.
Half-Life 1. Ooh, wow, yeah.
That's... Sorry, that guys.
At this point in time, I had not even really played Half-Life 1. I would get to that kind of as the Orange Box was changing my mind about the entire series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, no, for me, I mean, that's tough, too, because I love Half-Life. GoldenEye's awesome. But I'm going to go with Doom 2. I was a Doom kid growing up, just playing on PC.
It's a good one.
Yeah,
it's a good. That's a good second favorite at this point in your life, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Like I'm not like a, not like a dumb kid choice.
Brian, you're the sequel guy, man. You like Halo 2. You like Doom 2.
I like Chex Warrior.
Well, it's interesting. Like I hate when like the conversation around Doom 1 or Doom 2 online usually comes down to Doom's better because better level design, and I agree. Doom 1, obviously, it was the first one, and then it does have way better level design. But like, and maybe it's because I was a kid, but Doom 2. It's just so exciting seeing them take everything they learned from Doom 1, throw in a double-barreled shotgun, a couple new enemies, and then just make these chaotic levels that just do crazy shit.
Yeah, you know? That's when sequels were different. You know, Halo 2 was very different from Halo 1, but back then, Doom 2, very similar to Doom 1. Yeah. I remember Contra, Super C on the NES. It was basically Contra with new levels, and they had the top-down view, and it's like it plays exactly the same.
Yeah.
Corey and Diente, did you guys play a lot of multiplayer in Halo 1, or was that more in 2 and all?
Oh man, Halo 1. Yeah, that's all night LAN parties, baby. Just
yeah, that was the best times ever.
I didn't really get
to me about that. Tell me about that.
It was 4 Xboxes, 4 TVs. We go in there. We'd look at Mountain Dew Code Red. You got Hot Pockets, man. We're set all night, baby.
Hot Red was the new hotness too.
We were just.
It was like a couple years after the game had been out before people really started doing that.
Yeah.
Because Halo had just grown and grown in popularity. And then I remember just making plans to have a LAN party at this guy's house I went to school with. And we didn't hang out outside of school other than to say, hey, we're going to do a LAN party at your house. And we got there and had, just like you always hear about, you know, 4 TVs set up, 2 in the dining room, 2 in the living room. And they had glass doors that you could close between the 2 teams.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a lot of 8v8, capture the flag and stuff like that. And we'd have to take turns because there was usually about 20 people there. So,
wow.
Like, I'm there with my girlfriend and we're, you know, sitting next to each other, riding in the Warthog. She's holding the flag, like some of the best times.
And man, kudos to you. I was always that kid that's like, if I had a girlfriend, screw him.
That's awesome. Wow, that's surreal. And it was like that for you too, Diente?
Oh, yeah. We'd go over there and it was my buddy's house. That was the house we would play a lot of Warcraft 3 in. He had like 4 computers lined up.
I love Warcraft 3.
Just co-op Warcraft 3, wow. Do all those side missions and stuff, side games. But Halo was huge. And we've talked about it before. Back then, you had to make SWAT with Halo. You had to do custom games. And that was really cool. I know, Corey, you called it License to Kill from
yeah, it's the GoldenEye mode, one hit kill, license to kill.
And it was a lot of fun, just like exploring everything, experimenting, and multiplayer ruled Halo 1 for me.
Oh yeah,
and then Halo 2 came out, and
Did you guys have a favorite? Do you guys have Do you guys have a favorite map from Halo 1 at all that you remember?
Yeah, Blood.
That you really like? Hang 'em High,
Blood Gulch.
I love
Blood Gulch.
And Blood Gulch, yeah. See, most all of my original multiplayer experiences with Combat Evolved came from the PC version because I was able to play it online for free, and it was lots of capture the flag and on Blood Gulch and lots of just crazy hijinks from people creating their own customs, and it played really well. I hooked up an Xbox controller to it and had a great time, but...
good memories.
And we'll,
That's
Halo
good to
2
hear.
Is where I did LAN parties.
Well, yeah, we'll get into like the online stuff later, but... I didn't really have online until 2010, man.
Okay.
So most of my experiences multiplayer wise are the split screen or the you know, the LANs. So
yeah.
It was a good building blocks doing the LAN stuff. Yeah.
Okay, so how do we say this again, Corey? Says Ding Chavez's Encyclopedia FPS.
Part 2. Yeah, he got it.
Part 2. Part 2.
Hot shots.
What a title.
Part B-U-X.
So, all right, guys, thank you for joining us on another episode of this series we have going on about FPSs.
A lot of fun.
I'm curious to see if part 3, if we are able to even talk about 2006, or if we barely just breach into 2005 before our usual 90-minute time runs out. But we'll get through them all. We just got to keep doing parts. We hope you guys enjoyed this. You want to say something, Corey?
I was just going to say, we might have to add some releases in a new year to the bottom of the of the list.
Oh, by the time we, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
True. Maybe I'll be able to play Immortals by the time we're done. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. Right.
I'm interested to see if we get to a period where, like, more contemporary, where things start to stagnate a lot. Because I feel like that's definitely coming, like the first-person shooter stagnation.
Inevitable.
But yeah, this is a really exciting time we're in right here. But this is kind of like Halo's shown up with the innovation, and no one's quite caught on to it yet. And then about that 2007 time is where things really start to change. But 2004, very interesting
this
as well.
That's so, a sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah. But all right, guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast. And as always, keep it sacred.